We're talking about CBAF, the Continuous Electron Beam Accelerator Facility. Aside from running experiments designed to reveal the nature of quarks and gluons, CBAF technology has many possible commercial spin-offs. For example, DuPont is excited about the free electron laser, which may allow it to produce cheaply a mildew-resistant carpet. Applied scientist Dennis Manos of the College of William and Mary joins us now. Also, Carl Schoenbach, a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Old Dominion University, who is also associated with CBAF. Carl Schoenbach, what's the difference between the free electron laser and lasers we already have?
The free electron laser is using the electron beam, which was described by Ken, and convert the electron energy into photon energy. And we are using light then to do something to matter, to change the properties of materials, for example. We have a large variety of lasers, again with solid state lasers, gas lasers, and semiconductor lasers. And what we all have in common, you have to create what's called population inversion. That means you have to get more atoms into an excited state than they naturally would do by just heating something. And you can't do that. You have to put energy into the system.
They're like a well-rehearsed drill team.
In principle, you could say that, yeah.
Okay, Dennis.
An analogy that sometimes I use to explain this to students is, it's not an accurate analogy, but if you have ever driven on a freeway and go over rumble strips before you come to a toll booth, there what's happening is the rumble strips are accelerating the chassis of your car up and down and converting some of your energy into sound that you can hear. And the pitch of that sound depends on how fast you drive over the strips. Well, this system that one uses to create a free electron laser at CBAF of wiggling the electrons in a magnetic field is an electromagnetic analog of those rumble strips.
Okay. And why is this so important? This is a big deal. They're making a big deal about this free electron laser at CBAF. Why?
It's a very special laser, as Dennis mentioned. It can be tuned very easily over an extremely wide range of wavelengths, from the infrared through the ultraviolet. It can be used also to change the property of a surface, to make a polymer which is normally insulating, make it conducting, and use it for circuit boards. This is one of the applications one of our industrial partners actually is pursuing.
Another thing about using CBAF is that, as Ken explained, they have the technology with superconducting cavities and very high power radio wave technology to create very intense, very powerful electron beams. So one has the capability of processing very large areas of material, and our industrial partners are interested in this. In connection with, for example, polymer processing, where one can take materials that are inexpensive or lightweight or substitutional for natural materials like silk or wool, and with photon processing, we're using the light from this laser, can create the look and feel of a more expensive product in this inexpensive substitute that also has better properties in terms of durability and formability and manufacturing and so forth. There's a polyester material that our partner from DuPont brings to many of our reviews, which on one side has been treated by the laser, by a laser which happens to be an excimer laser, not the free electron laser, and the other side hasn't been treated at all. And you can feel the very nice silky texture where it's been treated. On the other side, it feels rather like the polyester you're familiar with, 100% polyester clothing, which a lot of people don't prefer. So that's one application. Another application that they're interested in for a large area is to produce bactericidal or fungicidal cloth, which could be used in hospitals for dressing or for sheets or for surgical gowns. More prosaic application is for carpets or for materials around the home, shower curtains, for example, that had a built-in mildewcide that persisted for years and years just by virtue of having been treated by these photons in the laser. So there are a lot of very interesting economic applications for this technology, which could happen in the very near term, meaning immediately.
Okay. Well, Carl, help me understand. When I think of a laser, I think of something that cuts. I think of a cutting beam, like you've seen the plaques that are the woodcut lasers, artwork that you see on the wall. How does this this free electron beam, rather than cutting, how does it make a fabric into feel like silk? That's a pretty neat trick.
I think there are two types of processes which we have to consider. One is just heating, because there's so tremendous energy in this laser beam, so tremendous power. It just heats material up very quickly, and so it changes its properties.
So how feasible is this going to be in terms of using it in industry? The thing, I believe, costs anywhere from some estimates $20 million to, I've heard, $50 million.
The current proposal to build the ultraviolet free electron laser is for approximately $25 million, which sounds like a lot, and it is indeed. That's a lot of money. But if you look at the production of a large company like DuPont or Monsanto, and you look at their annual revenues, that's a small fraction of their annual manufacturing and sales. If you could drop the price of photons so that they were on the order of a penny per unit instead of a dollar per unit, then...
Photons are expensive, are they?
Yeah, they are. In fact, they're incredibly expensive. And for chemical processing, it's been a limitation. The only people who use photons or light to do chemical processing are very high value added steps like pharmaceutical industry steps. If you could make those photons cheaper, then the commodity markets like DuPont and Monsanto can come in. And now you're talking carloads of material. An awful lot of nylon carpet is produced every year. And if that could be treated and made more resilient and more useful in some sense, then you are recovering that investment very, very quickly.
What about some of the other technologies that are coming out of CBAF? I understand Ken mentioned the control mechanisms, that you've got a very fine control. What are the applications for that?
Our field is to look at properties of materials at very high electric fields. That means when you apply a very large voltage, and that's the situation which we have at CBAF. And this is also one of the problems which has to be solved at CBAF, to make the system better and better, apply higher and higher voltage, and make higher and higher energy electron beams and laser beams this way. And we can help. We are looking, for example, into using diamond films to cover cavities, the cavity where the electron beam is generated. It's not like we don't want to create a treasure trove, something like this. Diamond is a material which is very highly insulating. And even thin films can improve the hold-off voltage, the voltage which can be applied to a system dramatically. And diamond is not as expensive as it was anymore.
So when you say a diamond film, you're talking about a very thin layer of diamond that would basically be a barrier. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it would be thin film, and the thickness of these films is generally a fraction of a millimeter, maybe hundreds of a millimeter. And it would be placed, deposited on metal, and so it would prevent, in principle, the exit of electrons from the metal, which could lead to a breakdown. A breakdown is a short in the system and would shut it down, in principle.
Can you give me an idea of where that might be applied in industry? What industry might use it for what kind of product?
It is used to cover ball bearings because the friction is very small of diamond-covered systems. In electrical systems, it's not very common. That's our research, actually. There are efforts underway to create diamond transistors, for example. The advantage of that would be you could operate them at very high temperature, and so you could put them in very hostile environments.
Any other technology applications we should know about?
Oh, hundreds.
Hundreds.
We could go on all day, from the superconductors themselves to the cavities. I mean, there just are hundreds of things in CBAF which are directly relevant, which take very little imagination to apply to bettering society in the near term. And then hundreds more, as Ken's pointed out, which will make us richer as individuals.
With the superconducting supercollider was such an expensive project. What makes this? How did CBAF survive, given the sort of the downsizing of big science? And why is it so important and didn't get cut when the SSC did? I'll throw that out to any one of you.
Without taking anything from the SSC or without saying anything negative about it, CBAF is a beautifully run, a beautifully managed project, and it has been at every step in its life at the cutting edge of what the Department of Energy and what the community would like to have seen. And it's involved a large number of participants. It seeks feedback from a lot of people. It's international already. The physics experiments, as Ken could tell you, are highly international. And so it has all the elements it takes to survive a downsizing. Along the same connection as you asked before about possible extensions in the future, there's a very active group within CBEF working to improve the technique by which you accelerate electrons altogether. This superconducting radio frequency cavity has been shrinking smaller and smaller in size to create the same level of energy in the electrons, and they're working to get another order of magnitude if they can. If they can, that would make projects like the SSC back within the realm of possible again, where what might cost $15 billion now, if you could make things smaller and better, it might only cost $1 or $2 billion. To resurrect something like an SSC. And CBEF has a team working very hard on these issues. So part of the reason they survive is they do look at the global spectrum of issues.
Last comments, Carl?
Certainly research should not just be directed to look for applications and to do something with it, but to learn about nature. But on the other hand, I think it's very satisfactory to see things working. And we see that with CBEF. It looks like we can do something and can bring it to the user, really, to commercialize it. And that's a very good feeling.
Great. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us, and with good reason. My guests today are Dennis Manos of the College of William and Mary, Carl Schoenbach of Old Dominion University, and Kenneth McFarlane of Norfolk State University. On our next show, we'll look at people in the media and how their concerns affect the media product we consume. This is With Good Reason. The project coordinator is Michael McDowell. Carolyn Elliott is the producer. John Wilkinson is the assistant producer. We had production assistance from Julie Boland. Kevin Puccini wrote the theme music. I'm Laura Womack. This program is produced with the help of WCVE Richmond. Thanks also to WHRV in Norfolk.
With Good Reason is produced for the Virginia Higher Education Broadcasting Consortium by the State Council of Higher Education and public radio stations serving Virginia. The views expressed are not necessarily those of the consortium or this station. To comment on today's program or to receive tapes or transcripts, call toll-free 1-800-245-2434.
From the time we get up to the time we go to bed, most Americans have a constant companion, the media. We read the paper with our coffee, commute to work with the morning drive DJ, and in the evening we unwind with the television set, absorbing countless commercials exhorting us to buy, buy, buy. On the next With Good Reason, we look at the people in the media and how their concerns affect the media product we consume. I'm Laura Womack.